Hey folks, and welcome to another Mountain Bikes Park podcast episode. It's episode number 5. Made it through to the half decade, I guess, if that's what you call it. Thanks for listening again. I'm glad to say this time around that we've had a bit of feedback. It's great. I've actually got some listeners. So I thought I'd just read a couple of them out. We heard from the most excellent Nolan Taylor. He was saying, good morning from Montana in the USA. Just want to thank you for the podcast. I stumbled upon your podcast from the Downcast app. He's new to mountain biking, but loving the podcast. Experienced runner and ultra marathoner, but he's chasing a new carrot and is starting with bike commuting to work and has been on the mountain biking bug. So great to hear that. Always good to see people getting into mountain biking. And I imagine Nolan must be very fit as an ultra marathoner, so probably could outrun us all on the mountain bikes. Well, certainly me anyway. So I won't invite him out for a ride anytime soon, but good to have you on the podcast, Nolan. Other than that, we have Tatsu Kiriyama as well. I'm not sure where he's from originally, but we've got a message for him saying, thank you very much for your interesting and informative podcast. Great source of information for the past few weeks, and the only complaint is that he wishes that the podcasts were longer. You'll probably have noticed that the last one was a bit longer, obviously. The first few were just recordings of previous episodes, but the most recent podcast was me and Grant chatting away, and this one's going to be a bit longer as well. So don't worry, the length's probably going to go for about 20 minutes to 30 minutes or so. So they'll be a bit longer from now on, so hopefully that'll suit you. So that's enough of the feedback. I'd love to hear more. So if you do want to get in touch, that would be absolutely brilliant. Just go onto the website and you can use the contact form there. That's at mountainbikespark.com, or you can send me an email at colin@mountainbikespark.com, or get me on Twitter at colinmcgray. Okay, so that's the feedback done. On to the episode. This time around, we're going to be talking about digital ride tracking. So I had this was actually a suggestion from Tatsu, so thanks for that, Tatsu. Something that he was wondering about was using apps to track your rides, using all sorts of technology to enhance your mountain biking efforts. So of all of Tatsu's suggestions, since I'm a bit of a geek and like using as much tech as I can on my bike, thought I'd have a go at this one first. So I'm going to go through my advice, my experience on using lots of ride tracking stuff, lots of exercise tracking stuff, including the tech that we use to record it and the software that I'm using to actually process it, and a couple of extra things at the end. So let's have a look at that. So first off, we've got recording devices. I thought I'd go through the type of stuff that I've used in the past and some of the other recording devices that I've heard of through friends as well. So yeah, I can give you some personal experience from the ones I have used, but I'll also give you some advice on just sort of opinions I've heard around as well, just to give you a bit of a wider view. So my main experience is with Garmin devices. I got my first Garmin years back now, probably 5 or 6 years ago. And these days I'm using a Forerunner 301. So it's the classic Forerunner. It's the watch, massive watch sits in the wrist. It's a wee bit heavy, but I quite like it actually. It's quite easy to put on, and it's a lot simpler than the Edge, for example. The Garmin Edge is a more bike suited device, and it actually attaches to your handlebars, and it's long ways. It looks more like a smartphone and gives you a lot more information, or a lot more easy to access anyway, a better heads up display, including mapping and things like that. And I have heard some good reports on them. The Edge, I think it's a really good device if you can get hold of it, mainly because of the cost, to be honest. They're not exactly the cheapest things in the world, a few hundred pounds generally. Whereas the Forerunner you can get for about 150 or so. And I like the Forerunner just because it's so simple. Like I say, the Edge you've got to go and attach to your bike. It tends to come with all the sensors, so you'll have to attach them to your bike as well. So it's just a bit more cumbersome. And actually, the Forerunner is just a bit more flexible too. I do have for a bit of running alongside my biking, triathlons, for example. So using a Forerunner, put it on my wrist for the biking, for the running sections of that is pretty useful. So that's why I like my Forerunner. I've got the heart monitor with it as well, obviously, so I can do my heart rate zones, that type of stuff. The great thing about the Forerunner is that it's really accurate. So I've been using the smartphone a little bit for recording recently, and I'm finding that recording via the smartphone is actually a little bit inaccurate sometimes. You quite often get, with whatever app you're using, I don't think it's the app, because I have experienced it with a few different types of apps, that you'll get jumps. So it'll lose a signal for a while, and you'll kind of, you'll have this section within your training segment or ride or run or whatever it is, where you seem to be traveling at 300 miles an hour because you've moved 500 meters in about 3 seconds. And it's tracking problems rather than anything else. Whereas I don't get that with my Forerunner whatsoever. The Garmin's really accurate, and I've heard the same with the Edge as well. There's obviously a few other options. I go with the Garmin, but there's other devices out there that do the same kind of thing. I use Strava mostly to record my training sessions, and it works with Soleus watches too. So you can use a Soleus watch to record your rides. And then there's also the Timex Ironman as well. It's a nice looking watch, actually, and Timex generally pretty good. So I haven't used it. I haven't actually heard many people that have used it, but from what I've read online, it's pretty well considered. So you've got those two options as well, and I'm sure there's plenty others out there too. But they're the ones that I've got the experience with, so I'd recommend checking them out. If you want to have a look at the Garmin I use, then you can have a look at mountainbikespart.com/5, and that'll take you to the show notes for this episode, and I'll have links to all the stuff I'm talking about on there. So anything else I mention in here too, you can just pop over to mountainbikespart.com/5. That's the number 5. And you'll find it all there. So next thing on recording devices, if you don't want to actually shell out for a device like a Garmin or a Soleus or a Timex, whatever it is, then pretty much most of us these days have got smartphones. And generally, most smartphones have got a pretty decent GPS in it as well. I've mentioned the fact that with smartphones, you're maybe a little bit less accurate, a little bit more temperamental, so it can jump around a wee bit, but still, the GPS does tend to be pretty good. So they're pretty, they're pretty reliable devices. It'll give you a good recording, basically for the cost of nothing, because you'll have your smartphone anyway. So they're pretty useful. I'll talk about the apps that you're going to use on your smartphone to record in a little while. I'll go through them in the next section, but we'll just go through a couple of other things around smartphones just now. For example, the Wahoo Fitness Pack, someone I'd never heard of before actually, but I've just been talking to a few people, and I've read a few really good bits of feedback on this online. I hadn't come across it before, but essentially with the Garmin, you can get a little device which connects to your bike. I've got one attached to my one of my back stays, and it counts your cadence and your speed at the same time. So the Garmin obviously measures your speed via GPS normally, but if you have this device, it adds cadence to that when you're out and about, and it adds speed to your indoor rides. So if you're on the turbo trainer, for example, your little device there on the back can measure your cadence and your speed just going by the speed of your wheel. So it's really nice for indoor rides on the turbo trainer if you want to track distance. Obviously it's a little bit, it's not quite true to form, because you're not getting resistance, you're not getting the friction from wind, that type of thing, but it gives you something to compare yourself to, so you see if you're improving on your turbo over time. But sorry, that's a bit of a diversion. The reason I said that was because you don't tend to get that with smartphone, obviously. You don't tend to get cadence particularly. You can get that though, and that's with the Wahoo that I've come across. What it is, it's a fitness pack that's around £100. You get this bike case with it, which turns your phone into a shockproof, waterproof device. So it won't let the rain in, won't let the wind in. Keep your phone nice and safe, your expensive iPhone or your Android, whatever it is. And it'll attach it pretty securely to your bike as well. So it's really good in that case. It has a little sensor that goes in the bottom too. So it's a little thing that plugs in the bottom of your phone. It's pretty small actually. It looks like it'd be nice and discreet. It won't bash off very easily, so it looks like it'll go on all right. And that measures your speed and your cadence. I've not seen it in person, but what I'm assuming is that it's got a device very similar to that Garmin one that'll attach to one of your stays in the back of the bike, and it'll sense something on your wheel and on your pedal, and that's what'll pick up the speed and the cadence. So that'll fire that into your phone and you'll get a really nice accurate reading there. I'm guessing that actually, despite the fact your phone can pick up speed or it can take speed from your GPS, as I said, can be a bit inaccurate sometimes. Possibly the speed cadence sensor with the Wahoo might sort of compensate for that a little bit. I'm not sure if it's going to take that speed instead of the GPS in case the GPS goes a bit erratically. So it could be a nice cover for the fact that, you know, smartphones sometimes aren't so reliable in that sense. So I thought that was worth throwing in, something I just came across recently, seen some good reports about it. It's not particularly cheap considering it's really just a case and a wee device that attaches on the bottom of your phone. But then again, the Garmin add-on I think is around £40, was it I paid? I can't remember exactly, but it wasn't, I mean it's not £100, but it's not hugely cheap either, so probably comparable to other sites that are products. The other one I wanted to mention, if you want to put your phone on your bike, I've tried a few different solutions. There's loads of them ranging from like £10 plastic, pretty cheap little cases that fire on your bike, do the job. But you know, I wouldn't trust it. Well, I wouldn't expect it to last too long. And if you've got a really expensive phone that you really don't want to fall off your bike, which pretty much most people, you probably want to invest a little bit more in your protection. But they range up to more expensive ones. You get up to like £40-50 for a case, and they then kind of go pretty reliably waterproof and reliably robust. So they'll stay on your bike, not fire your phone off under your wheels at any given moment. But there's one case worth a mention in particular, and that's called the Quad Lock. Now the Quad Lock is a funny one because it comes with a case that is in two parts, I suppose. You get the case itself, which is on your phone. So it's actually just very similar to a normal iPhone case. Just so you know, this only works on the iPhone. So if you've got an Android phone like me, it's no use. But I've used it with an iPhone in the past, and it is really good, so that's why I'm bringing it in. But yeah, the case that you put it in, very similar to a solid phone case. So if you do a lot of outdoor stuff, you probably have a decent case. Like I use a Otterbox Commuter for my Samsung X3. It's a really nice hard case with rubber inserts, so it's really nice. Doesn't have the front cover like the full-on Otterbox, but I prefer it just to be a bit more slimline to make up for it. But this the Quad Lock case is very similar to that, I think, except for the fact that in the center on the back it has a little I don't know what you'd call it, a dock, basically a little port, I suppose, which what you do is you just turn place it on, click it onto the actual mount part, turn it, and it's attached. Now, the mount part you can attach to anything you want. So you can put that on the bike. It's just a little device, a little sort of plastic bar almost, that attaches to your handlebars and sits there all the time. It's pretty short. It's quite out of the way, so it doesn't really get in the way very easily, or a lot, I should say. And you can attach your phone to it really easily just by clicking it on and then turning it around. So it just goes on and turns to lock in place. And the funny thing is, or the most useful thing about the Quad Lock, is that they promote it as a multi-use one. So you can put it on your bike, you can lock your phone into it, take it off really easily. Then you can put it in your car, so you have one of them in the car as well. You take your phone, you click it into it. That's always attached to your car dashboard. They've even got in the advert, they've got them attached to, say, the wall of the shower. So you bring your phone in there, you click it onto the wall, and you can use it as just a music player or a video player, whatever, anywhere around the house. Say you're in the kitchen, you have a suction cup, one of these mounts that attaches to your tiles behind your cooker, and you can use it to play videos to teach you how to cook. So it's quite a versatile little thing, but it's useful for obviously the bike as well. And if I still had an iPhone, I'd be using one of these guys because I just found it really useful. They're not cheap, I have to say. They're coming up for £100 or so per unit, but just for the versatility. And it's the ease of installation as well. I find that when I'm going out for a ride, the reason I don't want an edge and the reason I don't tend to mount my phone on my handlebars is just the faff of getting it attached. So you spend a good 10 minutes actually figuring out how to get the damn thing on, how to put it in, make sure it's all waterproofed up, all that type of stuff. And it just adds too much hassle to a ride. You can't just get on your bike and zoom out there. So that's why I quite like the quad lock, because you just bring your phone along. It's in the case anyway. You click it on and it's done. And it's a really robust little thing as well. It's not going to fall off. And the case is, I believe the case is waterproof, actually. I can't remember now exactly, but I'm sure you can look into that. I believe it is. And you'd hope it would be for the cost, actually. So that's about it for the devices. But the last thing I want to just say was that the kind of comparison of how you use them, the Garmin or any other device like that, so if you've got your live device like the Garmin or Timex watch, something like that, they're useful for live monitoring of your progress. So you can see your speed, you can see your cadence, you can see your heart rate, all that kind of stuff right then and there. Now, the smartphone apps don't tend to offer as much information, or the one, well, I'm saying this, I'll explain a little bit later about what I use and my experience of them just now, but say Strava, for example, which is the main one I use, it only shows your time taken so far, your average speed, and the distance covered. And while they're useful, it's not really as much as probably your average athlete in sort of decent training needs, which is more like a fair bit more information around cadence, around your speed right then and there, lap speed, that type of stuff. So just so that you know, smartphone apps in my opinion are a bit more of a set and forget. So you'll press the record button, you'll throw it in your bag or in your pocket, and then it'll allow you to analyze your ride afterwards. You don't tend to use them actually during your ride. And from speaking to others and a lot of reading and forums online, I think that's pretty much the way most people use them these days. I don't think there's a lot of people running a smartphone with Strava actually on their handlebars, although I'm sure there are quite a few, but the majority are just using them for post-ride monitoring. Whereas the Garmin and the other devices like that, they are the ones that are really used for keeping track of how you're going, making sure you're keeping your pace up, you know, you're keeping your heart rate zones correct, all that type of stuff. So just that little bit of information about how these devices are probably comparatively used. Okay, so that's enough of the recording devices. I think we've covered it all there. Just at that point, I'd love to hear if you use a different one. So if you do use a Soleus or one of the Timex Ironman watches or anything else, it'd be great to hear, get a bit of feedback on that. By all means, send me an email or anything by the contact details I give you at the start, or I'll do it again at the end. Let me know what you think. So on to the apps. Now, a little caveat at the start here. This could all have changed literally days after I've recorded this, because one of the great things about the exercise app industry at the moment is that they're massively sort of stepping forward every single day. They're changing, they're innovating, they're bringing in new features all the time. And the ones I'll talk about are probably the most popular three, including a few others actually, but the top three I'm going to talk about are Strava, MapMyRide, and Endomondo. Now, I've come down to these three through a fair bit of research, talking to others, looking around in forums, that type of stuff, and I'll go through the features that I have. My caveat is that Strava is the one I use a lot. That's the one I know best. I have used MapMyRide and Endomondo in the past, but it's a wee while back now, so I could be slightly out of date on the features, but I've looked them all up. I've done a bit more research just in the last day or so, talked to other people using both, so hopefully I'm up to date. But like I say, they could release new features, they could be competing, putting out new stuff tomorrow, so it could be out of date straight away, but hopefully this will give you a good comparison. And actually, the main features don't tend to change quite so much, so hopefully this is definitely useful to you. So let's start out with Strava. That's my one, the one I use every day. Every day I go riding anyway, or running. I use it for both my riding and my running. Strava can record most activities. It talks about, it mentions when you're recording your activity, all sorts of stuff like cross-country skiing, all that kind of thing. So you can set what you're recording, but generally I've just used it for riding and running. And on the iPhone and Android, they have a running and a cycling app. So you can record both of those directly in using either of those apps. Now, the thing that really drew me into Strava in the first place was the competitive element that comes along with it. So Strava use a thing called segments. Segments is their own concept, which basically means splitting up your ride into sections through which you compete with others and with yourself. So say you go out running quite regularly, or go out cycling quite regularly along the same route, just local to you. You do that route two or three times a week. Once you come back in, so the first time you record that route in Strava, once you come back in, you hit the stop button and you can have a look at that route on your phone or your website. And it'll tell you if you've covered any segments. Now, a segment will be one part of that ride. So it might be a 1 mile flat, which might be a sprint or something like that. Or it could be a section of a hill. So it might be a really steep hill that was along that run. And segments appear because somebody else in the past has covered that part of the road as well. And they've set that as a section that they want to race others on, or compare their own times on. So you can set it as a private segment or a public segment. If it's a public segment, it means that you're inviting others to do it as well. And anyone else that has ridden or run that piece of the trail or the road in the past, Strava will fire off and it'll capture all of the sections, all of the times that people have done over that, and it'll create a leaderboard. So everyone that has done that section will be put on that leaderboard by the time that they took to do it. And from then on, basically every time you go and do it again, you'll be ranked on that leaderboard. So you can be go out and go a bit faster, and you move up the leaderboard a couple of places, you've improved by a few seconds. And basically, it's great fun. It's great motivation for improving your times, for getting a bit faster. An example of that is that there was, when I was living in Edinburgh recently, there's a segment coming up from the canal, the railway track that heads up out of town to the west towards Balerno. Now this is a hill which is probably about 3 or 4 miles long. And it just so happened to be on my cycle home from work. And actually, my brother went out and did that section quite often as well. So he had gone and he'd set a time on it. He was about, I think there was about 30 or so times set on it. And he'd come in at about fifth. So he was doing pretty well. He was training a lot at that time for an Ironman he was coming up for. So I thought, obviously, my little brother, go out and try and beat him. So I fired out there on my new Boardman at the time. And this is road biking, obviously. So I know we're supposed to be mountain biking, but, you know, a little bit of skinny wheels every now and again. But got to the bottom of the hill, and I spent the next 3 or 4 minutes absolutely sweating my ass off trying to get up that hill as fast as I possibly could. Now, I know for a fact that just with nobody else watching, with no sort of, even with just my own motivation to get up there as fast as I can, set a best time, the best time that I can, there's no way I would have tried as hard as I did many times on that hill, because I knew that Strava was recording me and my time would be posted on that leaderboard and be compared against my brother's time. And I was just dying to beat it every single time I went up that hill, and I nearly killed myself halfway, like all the way up it every single time. I just know that segments have for me pushed me way beyond what I would do normally, and that's the reason I still use Strava, for that one reason, for those segments. And well, for some other reasons as well. I do like the app for quite a few reasons, but that is the primary reason that I started using it, that I got other people into it, encouraged other people, friends of mine, to start using Strava because of those segments. Now, that was around an uphill, and kind of, I think Strava mainly came out of road biking, really. So it does centre around the uphills a little bit, those perverse road bikers enjoying their uphills more than their downhills. But, for example, Glen Tress, probably heard of it if you're into mountain biking. One of the best mountain biking trails in the country, just south of Edinburgh, has absolutely tons of Strava recordings, Strava segments all over it. So there's plenty of downhill as well. Spooky Wood, for example, it's the very top section of the Red Run at Glen Tress. There's a segment coming from the top of Spooky Wood down to the first section, and there's hundreds of people listed on that segment. So you can try and fire down Spooky Wood as fast as you can. If you're a full-on downhiller, you can see if you can get in the top 10 Trust me, though, it is fast, so it's hard to beat, but you can have a go at it and you can see how you compare to everyone else. And I think that's what makes Strava so much fun. It's the competition aspect and the comparing yourselves to other people, seeing exactly where you stand. And even though it can be a bit depressing from time to time, my running in particular, I go along sections, I go down hills, up hills, whatever, find segments like that, and I find myself halfway down a leaderboard of about 50 people. But I know I'm improving because I'm going up a few places each time, so it's really good that way. So a recent thing about Strava as well, moving on from the segments, is that they've just come out with routes. So you can actually start planning routes on Strava too. So you can go on Strava before you go for a ride, you can map out a route. It'll give you elevations, it'll give you distances, all that type of stuff. And that's really handy actually. And it's made it catch up a little bit with the other ones like Map My Ride. Map My Ride, one of the biggest advantages of it over Strava is that it does a lot of mapping, or it has done mapping and navigation for a long time. So you can pre-map rides on that and then go and ride it. Now with Map My Ride, I haven't actually used this. This was just me talking to somebody else. But they say that you can actually navigate as well. So you can use it as a navigation tool. So you can go and map your ride. You can map out a route. Say you want to do a 50-mile ride. Map it out. And then you can actually just stick that in your handlebars and you can go and ride it and use the app as a navigation app. So Map My Ride's still got the advantage there. It's still got the navigation aspect, but Strava now lets you do routes as well. So you can at least map out a ride and figure out distances, figure out good routes. And actually with Strava, the great thing is that the routes are public. So you can go on there and you can find other people's routes. So if you're new to an area or you want to just find somewhere new to ride, you can go on there and you can explore the routes. You can find some new places to go. On that, for mountain biking in particular, I find Strava really useful. The segment's really useful because they give you pointers as to where some hidden routes might be. Now, I recently moved a bit north and I was trying to find some mountain biking around Angus area. And there's quite a few forests around, one over just by Perth particularly. And I was wondering whether there was any mountain biking going on there. So I fired up Strava, went on the segment explorer. This is just basically a map that shows you where segments are. So you can look around, you can see where segments are located and then plan to go out and conquer them the next time you go out. And it turned out that that forest right next to Perth actually had tons of segments in it. So obviously it gave me a clue that there's tons of good mountain biking in there. And I went and visited there a couple of weeks ago and found absolutely great trails around that section actually. So really useful way of finding good places to go and mountain bike. So other things I really love about Strava, but this is common to all of the apps. Map My Ride and Endomondo as well have this, and that's community. So you can, I mean, the big thing about these apps is that they're only fun when you have your friends in there too. So it ends up that I can tell you all the advantages of each one, but if your friends are all in one, if your friends are all using Map My Ride, you're going to go and use Map My Ride, because what you want to do is compare yourself to them. You want to be able to egg each other on. You want to be able to give each other credit for your ride, see what rides you're doing, what runs you're doing, that type of stuff. So the community aspect is a huge part of it. Now with Strava, you can set up groups, so you can actually set up a team. Now that can be, there's a lot of people using it for formal teams, such as running clubs or cycling clubs. So there's plenty of cycling clubs in there using it to create a place for their members to log their rides, to compare themselves, to see how the club is progressing with times and, you know, average speeds, all that type of stuff. I use it for comparing myself to about four or five different friends. We all have a bit of a competition, just seeing how far we can all ride in a week, how much exercise you've done, that type of stuff. And it's just a friendly competition. It's really useful that way because you can see your close friends, what they're doing. You can give each other sort of pats on the back as to good hard rides, that type of stuff. So it's really nice for motivation like that. I mean, I've already said that the segments make me ride harder, but just in general, your pace is one of the well, for running particularly, and for cycling, obviously your speed for cycling, but your pace for running is shown pretty prominently on each ride that you record. And just knowing that that's going to be visible there, that people will see it, especially in my group of four or five friends, they're going to see that pace. And I'm out running and I'm feeling sore, it's hurting like hell, and I want to slow down, but I'll think of that pace, and I'll think of the fact that I don't want to log a plus an eight and a half minute mile plus. I want to be under seven. I want to be under 8 minutes in the 7 minutes mark, and it'll push me on. I want to make sure that that number is on my profile as the latest run, so that my friends see it. So it's really good for that. And the goals as well, they're really handy. So you've got goals you can set. You can set two types of goals. You can set on a segment. So there's a segment, there's a road really close to me where somebody set a segment which is exactly a mile long. It's a really long, flat, straight mile, and it's really good for sort of comparing your pace and trying to improve on. And I've set myself a goal of conquering that in less than 8 minutes. Now, I know that doesn't seem very fast for a mile, but, you know, I'm not that good at running. I'm improving, but I'm trying to improve anyway. And obviously, this is halfway through a sort of 30-minute to 45-minute run as well. So I've set myself that goal, and I'm getting closer and closer to it. And my goal is middle of April to beat that. So I've got that set there, and it's sitting there in my Strava, and I can see myself getting closer each time. Similarly, you can set yourself a weekly goal. So you can set yourself a mileage goal. So if you want to make sure you're cycling 50 miles a week, you can set that goal, and there's a little progress bar that tells you how close you're getting to it. So that's a really nice feature as well. Now, that may well be, now that I think about it, that may well be a premium feature. If it is, there is a premium account you can get on Strava. It costs about £5 to £10 a month or something like that. It's not very much. I ended up paying actually more because I just wanted to support the site because I was using it so much. And then the premium features were actually just really nice after that. So yeah, just to let you know about that. Last couple of things just about Strava in particular, and I'll move on to the other ones. Strava run challenges every month or so. So you've got massive challenges through the whole community. For example, how many miles can you cycle in January? Or how many miles can you climb in January? So it'll be everyone in the whole of Strava that is allowed to enter, and everyone that has entered logs all their rides, and basically it's all added up. You're put on a big massive leaderboard. I'm not sure what it takes to get to the top of that, because there's loads of pros on Strava, but you can see how you go. I mean, if you're top half of the leaderboard of 30 odd thousand people, then I think you're probably doing pretty well. But it's quite a nice little feature, and I can see them sort of splitting that out and doing a lot more of them in future. Okay, so on to the other ones. We've got Map My Ride as well. That's the second one I'm going to talk about. I used Map My Ride a while back. It was actually Map My Run initially that I was using it for, and then I started using it for the Map My Ride features as well. So basically it's tied into the larger tool, which is Map My Fitness, and that's probably one of the biggest advantages of Map My Ride. It's the fact that it's a better overall tool for measuring fitness and training in general. Like I said, Strava can record cycling and running definitely, and you can record other activities like well, they've got 7 or 8 different things, including kayaking, cross-country skiing, that type of stuff. But they're not tailor-made for that or anything like that. It's just the fact that you can say that's the type it was. Whereas MapMyFitness gets a bit more in detail than that. You can actually put in things like hikes and walks. You can put in workouts, so weightlifting workouts, that type of thing. So there's a lot more flexibility in the type of activities you can record. And if you want to record your riding and your running as part of a larger fitness routine, then it might be that Map My Fitness or Map My Ride as part of the Map My Fitness toolkit is a better option for you. It does have a lot of the same features as Strava. So it does have things like it's got the routes, as I said, it's got all the community stuff. It's got challenges that they do every week, every month, sorry, and a bunch of other things as well. The one thing that I kept coming out when I talked to people about Map My Ride is that a big disadvantage, or one disadvantage of Strava, is that if you're out on a ride, obviously if you're using a smartphone to record, these type of things are using GPS, the screen tends to be on, it runs down the battery pretty quick. And with Strava, the most recent that I've heard anyway, is that if your battery runs out, say, then annoyingly all your data disappears. So it doesn't record it. Basically, if your battery runs out, it's all gone. But with MapMyRide, apparently, if your battery runs out, it will record it. It sort of records it as it goes along. So when you get home, you'll obviously miss the bit when the battery's run out, but it will record the bit that it did record well while the battery was still active. So yeah, pretty useful in that sense. The other advantage it kept coming across was the fact that it was less competitive. So, disadvantage, I should have said. There's less competition. The segments aren't as big a factor, or there aren't any segments, I should say. So the motivation to keep your exercising up with MapMyRide isn't quite there as much as in Strava either. So that's MapMyRide. Endomondo. Again, tons of the same features in Endomondo. It's got the challenges as well. Endomondo, one of the things that came up with it, feedback from other people, were that speech during the ride is quite useful for that. So it can update you on your progress, your speed, distance, that type of stuff. And it's quite, a lot of people find it quite useful to be told what they were doing, what was going on, and just get a bit of feedback on their ride, how they're going. Also, it seems to work really well with PBs. So Strava will tell you when you've beaten PBs, and it will record PBs for certain distances. So you've got your personal best for 3K, 5K, your mile, that type of stuff. But it might just be me being stupid, but I can never find them. So I can never actually find just one page which shows you all of my PBs. Whereas Endomondo seems to have this pretty front and center. So you can actually find them really easily. And it lets you track how much you're improving really well. One downside of Endomondo was that a lot of people said that it's just full of adverts. So there's adverts on every single page. They're just bombarded with them. So let's just tie it up. I'm not going to tell you which one to use. Strava, I've already said, is the one that I've ended up using mainly for the segments and the fact that I had a few friends on already. But if you've got pals on MapMyRide or Endomondo, you're going to end up using them. So it's up to yourself. I would say the main thing is that no matter which one you use, all of them pretty much motivate you to do just a bit more exercise, let you track your rides, and motivate you just to get out there a bit more often, improve your speed and your fitness as you go. So pretty big advantages no matter which one you use. So let's start to tie things up. Thanks again for coming back to listen to the show again. I'll be back again in a couple of weeks' time with some more features. Please do, as Nolan and Tatsu did, tell me what you want to hear about. So tell me what features you want on here, what questions you have in mountain biking. I'll be trying to get more people on here. So if you wanted to be on the show, by all means, if you've got someone you want to talk about, give me a shout. Email me on colin@mountainbikespart.com. I'm happy to have anyone on that's expert in any types of areas around mountain biking. You're a bike builder, you're a maintenance guy, you're a racer, anything like that, let me know and I can get you on. Or even if you just have a couple of questions like this one about apps, be happy to have you on to ask your question and chat with you about it. So as I said, thanks again for coming. Get in touch, give me some feedback. Hopefully give me some reviews on iTunes as well. That'd be absolutely brilliant if you have the chance. I'd really, really appreciate that. So, again, talk to you next week and have a good fortnight of riding.